Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 370 for Monday, December 19th, 2011. Good greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in your questions, you send in your tips. We look it all over, we try to provide some answers, we have a little discussion here, and together we all try to learn a little something new about the Mac and other Apple stuff. Here from Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun. And I got to say here. That episode, I'm sorry.
Sorry, John.
Oh, back to you, here, Pete, and then I'll make
Hampshire
a...
with Dave. Not in the same place as Dave, but next to him. Is Pilot Pete.
That's right. We are not breaking the laws of physics here. We are in the same room, but not the same place.
Awesome. But we did have one person point out. So, of course, 370 is not as pleasing as 369. But then one of our listeners pointed out that they are so looking forward to episode 4816, which will then meet that pleasing, right?
Oh, 4816.
Four times 12. I'm sorry.
Did you calculate the approximate date of episode 4816?
Or 12, I'm sorry.
So oh, well,
four
either
times
way, it
one,
could
four
work.
Times two, four times three. But
right, but you could it could be four times four is eight, you know, and now four times four is 16. So we could do powers of four, and then that, it's a whole different thing. But by then we would be at 248. Well, actually we've already done 248, but
ow,
we missed that.
Ow, so. My brain.
So anyway, John, what were you saying?
All I know is I unless we step up our production schedule, I don't think either of us will be alive if it comes to episode 4,800.
I don't know. I mean, we've done 12. Figure 300 episodes in 6 years because we're at 370 now. Well, maybe not even quite.
So we'll hit 1,000. In about another 12 years, right? Assuming
maybe another 10 years, right? That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, yeah. Yeah.
We've but enough about the future. Let's get back to the present.
So, I had an interesting discussion this week, John, that led to a question that we're going to answer. But, in the process of this, I realized that there's a lot of things that we talk about in this show, kind of the foundation, if you will, that we accept as sort of stuff that we see every day and maybe don't even think about it. And yet it's brand new stuff to our listeners, and having conversations and helping people, you know, face to face with their computers where we can actually interact back and forth kind of helps us realize that. And so one of the things I wanted to talk just a little bit about today, John, was the Finder, because there's some cool things that you can do with the Finder, not necessarily advanced stuff, but just some tips. And there were a couple I came across, and I hope you've got maybe a couple that'll come to mind. And then we'll go into the rest of the questions in the show.
But, I got a boatload.
Okay, good. Great. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, in a lot of the answers and when we're going through stuff, we wind up talking about the home folder. And when you're reading articles, especially articles that we write, we might call it the home folder, or sometimes it's going to be abbreviated as tilde. And tilde is your home folder, and that's just the way the terminal refers to it, or a shortcut that you can use in the terminal, sometimes in the terminal, to refer to it. But when we talk about the home folder, what we're talking about is if you're in the Finder on your Mac, you have in Lion, it's called Places. I think previously it was called Favorites. But in the Places list, you will see an icon.
You got that reversed, but.
Oh, sorry. That's right. I forgot.
In Lion, it's favorite. Yeah, because I'm looking right now between the two. But yeah, sorry. So it's different name for same essentially thing. The same thing, which is important locations on your Mac. And of course, in both, it shows the home folder as a little home.
Yeah, you're going to
have a little house.
Yeah, you're going to have a little house. And next to it is what's commonly referred to as your short username. So when you set up your account on your Mac, or when somebody set it up for you, you have your username, which for me, let's say, is Dave Hamilton. In fact, that's exactly what it is on my Macs. But my short username I've defined as just Dave. Now, I might have defined it as Dave Hamilton, or I might have defined it as Dave H or D Ham, whatever I wanted. But that's what's going to be next to that. Now, when you click on that, it brings you to your home folder. if you have to navigate here otherwise, and you can't get to this places or favorites list, depending on which OS you're on, you can get there simply by going to your hard drive, going to the users folder, and then in there, you will see all the home folders. And if you only have one user defined, you will see two folders here. Typically, one is your home folder and the other is named shared. So this is one little thing about the Finder that, again, we talk about so much, and I'm sure we'll talk about in today's show in some way, shape or form. And I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to kind of kick this off with that. So hopefully that explains where the home folder is. Inside the home folder, of course, are not only your documents, your music, your movies, but also a library folder that holds a lot of application data and settings and preferences and that sort of thing, too. So that's the first one on my list, John. Why don't you take the first one on your list and we'll bat it back around a little bit.
Great. Well, I'm going to take the first one that's not on my list because I just found it as we were talking
even
about
better.
This here. We've had a lot of people ask us this, and I'll tell you where you're going to find this in both Snow Leopard and Lion. So we have gotten questions where people have said, gee, you know what? I used to see whatever on my desktop, the desktop being the space, not the Finder window, but just the general, you know, thing that's behind all of that stuff here. And a lot of times people are used to seeing certain things there. And we've gotten questions saying, oh my gosh, what happened to it? Where did it go? It disappeared, because some people prefer to be able, especially if you've worked with a system that's been set up this way, to have certain things on the desktop, which you then double click on them, and then they'll lead you to a Finder window that's relevant. And the place that you want to find this is if you go to the Finder menu and you say preferences and you say general, you're going to see checkboxes, and you can tune this accordingly depending on what you want to see or what you don't want to see. Maybe it's overwhelming or it clogs your desktop, because I've seen some pretty messy desktops, both physical and virtual. But you're going to see checkboxes, and you can, and in both Snow Leopard and Lion, you're going to see hard disks, external disks, CDs, DVDs, iPods, and servers, both in the general category of the Finder preference. The other thing that I just noticed here, which I think is useful, and actually something that I switch back to the way I'd like it, because Lion changes this behavior a little bit and always annoyed me, and now I just figured out how to change it. There's another choice here. So this is actually two, and then we'll go back to you, Dave, where it says new Finder window opens. And now normally, or at least what I like, is I like it to open the aforementioned home folder. And that was the choice on my Snow Leopard machine, but on my Lion machine, it was set to open the, which I find kind of annoying, the All My Files view. So I actually switched it back to my home folder view. So
oh yeah. I forgot about that. All my,
yeah, I'm not crazy about it. Some people may like it, but I much prefer if I open a new Finder window to come into my home folder, because that's a natural place to start things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I like it. Cool. All right. So one other thing that came up this week, we talked about where you find your desktop in a Finder window, which is in that either places or favorites. What you may not realize is, you can do a couple things with that list. First of all, you can reorder the items in that list simply by grabbing them and dragging them up and down. Grab the name or grab the icon and just move, and it will move things around. The other thing you can do with that list is you can move things, well, into it and out of it. So if there's something there that you never use, you can go ahead and take it out of there. And all you do to take it out is grab the folder and drag it out, and it will disappear in a little poof of smoke. And if you want to drag a folder or even a document in, you can do that too. Just navigate to that in the Finder and then drag it over and place it in that list where you want it. Again, you can organize it however you want. And it'll appear there. So you can use this. And remember, shows up in most file dialog windows too, which means that you can, I have my documents folder over there, of course, but I also have subfolders of my documents folder. I've got one for Mac Observer, one for Backbeat Media, you know, one for music. And I put all of those in my favorites. And that way they're there in the Finder and in my, when I'm going to open or save files. Really, really handy stuff. So, you know, that again, these are things that I've been doing for so long that I completely forgot about the fact that this isn't how, maybe everybody doesn't know this. And so that's why we wanted to share this stuff. So go ahead, John, keep us rolling here.
All right. I got one, and then I think Pete may actually have one to offer us. Right. But I'm gonna step on Pete here. Sorry, Pete.
No worries.
Sorry, Pete.
So another one in Finder Preferences, which is another place where you may not know how to tune this. So of course, there's the sidebar, which appears on the left hand side of the screen. And how do I change what's there, you may ask? And well, I'm going to tell you, because it's in the same place, Finder Preferences, and there's a sidebar preference. And depending on how much you can put up with or what you want to see, you may want to tune this. And in both Snow Leopard and Lion, there are several general categories. Devices, which could be your computer, hard disk, external disks, even your iDisk. Shared, different places. And a search for thing, which, you know, I actually got to shut that off because I never use that particular view. I don't know how many people do. I personally have never gotten rid of it or used it, Dave. And actually, I should probably just uncheck everything there because I really don't use it. If I want to do a search, I do it manually. And actually, I see here on Lion, it doesn't appear. I think it was just in Snow Leopard.
Yeah, they got rid of it in Lion nicely.
Yeah.
But again, sidebar is it preferences, sidebar is where you can tune what you see on the left-hand column there. And you may want to add things or subtract things depending on exactly what you want to see. I find the ones that are especially useful, especially in the shared section there. You know, Back to My Mac, Connected Server, Bonjour Computers. A lot of times you may want to know if a shared device has popped onto the network, and that's where you are going to be able to tune that behavior.
Cool. All right. Yeah, that's good stuff. They, you know, that search for stuff is gone in Lion, but if you create a search and say you want to save it, it will populate over in the sidebar of your Lion. It just won't be in the search for section. I think it actually puts it in favorites is what it does. I would have to check that because I'm not on a Lion machine right now.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Pete.
Okay, well, actually, one kind of dovetails to what John was just saying, and I actually take one of my folders that I frequently use and have to save documents to for work and that sort of thing, and I drag that over into my sidebar, so that's always there, so I don't have to drill down two or three levels to get there quickly.
Yep.
Excuse me. But one of the other things I like to do, at the risk of having someone's toolbar wind up looking like their desktop, I have two or three automator programs that I've written. One resizes my JPEG files for the to email them. And another one I use it renames it to all lowercase because I put things up on the web, but all lowercase I can remember. I don't have to remember what's high, what's low. So I've written a couple automator things. You can drag those into the toolbar and implement them with just a single button click, and a couple other, like a JavaScript program a friend of mine wrote for me for working with my schedule at work. It's not really an app, but I can call it up by placing that in the toolbar of the Finder. Just drag it up there to the toolbar, and then you can find it, you know, use it anytime you want. And you can use cute little icons by doing screen capture and then the get info and the edit that
paste
icon.
Paste
the icon to it. So I customized my toolbar a little bit, and I find very few Mac users with customized toolbars.
You know, that was a real popular feature. And by the toolbar, folks, we're talking about the top of your Finder window.
Right.
Right. To the left of the search and to the right of all your other icons that you might have in the toolbar. That was a big feature. I think they touted that in 10.1 when that came out.
Oh, okay.
And then they came up with this customizable sidebar, and it sort of went away, obviously not in functionality, but in terms of marketing and that right. sort of thing. And so, yeah, that's right. Now you can also customize your toolbar with Apple options as well by going to the View menu and choosing Customize Toolbar. And there's other stuff you can throw up there. You can put spaces in, and this stuff is interchangeable and intermixable with the stuff you throw up there. So you can put your own stuff in and put separators in and spaces and all that. So yeah, really good stuff. I forgot about that, Pete.
Yeah, thanks. I guess I'd add on to that also, if you want to get something out of the toolbar, you got to hold down the command button to drag it out of the toolbar. It won't just drag out. And that happens up with the toolbar across the desktop as well too.
Okay. You mean the menu bar?
The menu bar, yeah.
Yes, that's right. If you want to take something out of there, you grab it with the command key. I always remember that by saying, I'm going to command you to be deleted, because otherwise I'm hitting shift and option and control. I can't remember. It's command. That's right. Cool. Anything else, John? I think I've exhausted my short list here.
Very quickly, this is a general tip for getting additional options in just about any program.
Yep.
But within the Finder, so your friend is the alt or the option key. And I noticed a few interesting things. So one thing you may want to do if you got some time to kill is just go through the programs that you're using. And as you highlight a menu, hold down the alt or option key to see if anything changes. And it probably will in some programs, or at least this is, I think, mostly an Apple convention, but other people glom onto this as well. But here are a few things that I noticed. So within the Finder, in the File menu, if you hold down the Alt or Option key, Open With will change to Always Open With. This is with Lion, so that's kind of neat. Get Info will change to Show Inspector, which is a different way of getting information about a file or files. And then Quick Look will change to Slideshow. So that's in the File menu. And then what I noticed in the Edit menu, again, holding down the Alt or Option key, Paste will change to Move.
That's okay. Only in Lion.
Right, right. These are all Lion. I just checked these in Lion. They may be slightly different.
Actually, everything you said for the File menu works in Snow Leopard, but Lion, the Paste Move thing is new. Yeah.
Or maybe that was brought on by the last thing I'm going to mention. And then I noticed that Select All changes to Deselect All, which I had never heard of until I started
monkeying around
with these keys. Monkeying around, because we love monkeys, because everybody loves monkeys, right?
Haven't you always wanted a monkey?
They're so cute.
Some of them.
Only a lot destructive.
Well, you know, I don't know. I just watched, have you watched Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
I have not.
No, it looks good, though.
Yeah, it's...
make you not want a monkey? Is that what you're saying?
You know, it depends all on how you treat your monkey. They may, as the movie implies, they may rise up against you if you don't treat them right. But
my tongue bleeding.
And the final thing I'm going to mention here, and I'm a big fan of this, but a total finder. If nothing else, it offers, and I will pretend that I'm echoing here, but it offers, if nothing else, Finder with Tabs. And it's just such a wonderful way to use the Finder when you have tabs and you can bop between different windows. Or rather than having individual windows open in the Finder, I much prefer to have tabs.
That's good.
I'm a big fan of that program. It's reasonably priced. I forget. I think it's $10 or something like that. And it changes the whole experience.
Does that do FTP? Do you know, John?
Well,
the Finder with Tabs. Because the one I use, we've mentioned it on the show before, and a cool stuff found is Forklift, which...
Oh, right.
You can have like side-by-side Finder windows in the same window, yet it'll also do FTP, so you can, if you do any web developing or anything like that, just drag files right across. And the reason we mentioned it was it does, if you're transferring from one drive to another, it does a nice job of estimating how long it's going to take a file to get across.
I don't think Total Finder does FTP, but I'm looking. Total Finder's $18, by the way.
18, I'm sorry.
Yep, no, which is still totally reasonable price for what it does. I don't think it does FTP. I'm not seeing it listed on the feature list. It's a Forklift is the one.
Yeah, Forklift,
like you said,
FTP as well.
It does FTP. So. Yeah. I do not think Total Finder does, but you know what? We'll check with the folks at Binary Age and we'll get back to you on that. Cause that's what we like to do. All right. Are we good with the Finder? If you have any questions, or of course, some of you are going to have your own tips that we didn't mention. So we'll pile those up and run through them in a follow-up show, because that's what we like to do. Yeah. Good. Everybody good? I can move on, John.
All right. Just make move sure on, the brother. Tips are not expensive.
Make sure what?
Well, no, we cannot guarantee that. We've had more than one person write in cursing us for helping them spend their hard-earned dough.
That's right. That's
you do here too.
Speaking of spending your hard-earned dough, I want to talk to you about our first sponsor for the show, which is actually a new sponsor. It is Hover at hover.com. Now, put very simply, Hover is, I see Pete's thumb up, so this is good. You're going to help me out with this. Okay, good. I had heard of Hover. They're a domain name registrar. So you can go and transfer your domains there and manage your domains and, of course, register new domains. One of the big things, and of course, this is, I think, kind of their modus operandi there, but one of the big things you're going to notice when you go to Hover, and especially as you go through the purchase process, and especially, does somebody have their sound turned up here? And especially if you have registered domains elsewhere, is you're going to notice that one thing Hover doesn't do is try and sell you a jillion other things along with your domain name. You kind of go and you put in your domain name and suddenly you're at the cart ready to check out. It's amazing. You don't have to go through six screens of, are you sure you don't want this? Of course, they do offer other stuff, but they don't shove it down your throat. So they do a lot of cool stuff. I put a domain in there that I own and I started transferring it in to kind of test the service. And they've got this, it's kind of like what you do there, Pete. They've got this FedEx tracking system thing going on where they let, they kind of let you see where the domain is. It's cool. So it's Hover. They're not new by any stretch. In fact, they were started by two cows and they've been around since 94. So 16 years, 17 years. And they really know what they're doing over there. And it's so clean and so easy to use. I'd heard of them, but until they came on board, I hadn't really dug in and started checking them out. But now this is the place you want to go. And they have, do you want to add something before I tell people how to get 10% off?
I don't know the code for 10% off, but here's why you're going to, if you're using somebody else now and you think you're happy with them, I'll bet you dollars to donuts that they're charging you for domain name privacy. When someone does a whois on your domain name, they get your name, address, phone number, birth date, all that other good identity, obviously not birth date, not birth but date, other identity theft stuff. It's included free with every Hover domain.
Well, there you
go. Just an option to check. And if you're having difficulties, I had a bunch of A records and some C names and MX records to change with some domains as I was bringing them across. Now, it isn't 24/7 phone service, but when you call them on the phone between 8 and 5 Eastern time.
Actually, it's between 9 and 8 p.m. Eastern time.
9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern time. About the second or third ring, someone actually picks up the phone and says, hello, this is Mike. Can I help you? Or, whatever their name happens to be. They pick up the phone. They answer. You don't go through this crazy voice.
They call it their no-wait phone support, which is exactly what you just talked about. So, you want to sign up with Hover. You want to try a domain with them. You want 10% off. Here's how it works. The coupon code is very simple. It's what we try to use for everybody that wants to do a coupon code. It is simply MGG. Now you can go to Hover and get to your cart and put in the code there. Or if you want to make it even easier on yourself, if you visit hover.com/MGG, it'll automatically roll that coupon code forward. And when you get to your cart, it's already going to be there. So either way, you can visit hover.com and then put in MGG as your coupon code when you buy, or hover.com/MGG. And you'll have it automatically when you go there. So go ahead and check them out and let us know what you think. They are a new sponsor here, and we are happy to have them. So I want to go into the question that kind of led to this Finder thing, and it's not really related to the Finder, but that's okay. Johnny D over at Backbeat Media, he asked in a staff meeting one day. He says, I got to figure out a way. He says, I've got a couple of PDFs for my kid that are, he's got some stuff he's doing for school, but I need to combine them. He says, I need to take pages from one and combine it into another. And you can do that in Preview, although it's not painfully obvious. So what you do is you open up your PDF in Preview and you have to open the drawer first. And you open both of them. And what I recommend doing actually is making a copy of one, whatever you want to make kind of the final one. And then open two PDFs or four PDFs or however many you want. And when you open the little drawer, it's called the drawer in Lion. It's called the sidebar in Snow Leopard. And you can force this to open even on one page PDFs. You just go to the view menu and it's right there. You'll see kind of thumbnails of all the pages and whatever one you have selected is the one you'll see in the main window. Well, you can take those pages there and drag them around. In fact, you can reorder a PDF right from here, but you can also take them and drag them to another file that you have open in Preview. So you can consolidate PDFs and put them all into one. And so that was the kind of the thing. And then we started talking about the Finder sidebar and that. So there you go. That's my little tip and trick and helpful thing for Preview and PDFs that you can consolidate them and move them around. It's good stuff. You knew that, right, John?
I'm pretty sure I came across that when someone on Twitter challenged everyone, how can I combine PDFs without having to buy extra software?
Yeah.
That, and I think that, I stumbled across it. Yeah. Preview has a lot of kind of unknown capabilities. And I think that's one of them, is the ability to combine PDFs if you treat it right.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Let's go on to Lucas here. Lucas writes, I have a late 2006 Mac Mini as my home media server. All of a sudden, a couple of weeks ago, it started displaying pixel artifacts on screen. The problem also occurs when I boot from my Snow Leopard install disk and when I boot from an external USB drive with a brand spanking new Snow Leopard installation, which suggests to me it's not an OS corruption. The pixelation does not occur right away at startup, but shortly after the Apple logo disappears. For what it's worth, Apple's hardware test reports no problems. Interestingly, when I boot from the Apple hardware test disk or when I start up in safe boot mode, everything looks normal, which suggests it's not a monitor, cable, or VGA adapter problem. What, he says, is it a problem with the integrated Intel GMA 950 graphics processor? Why does the problem not occur in safe boot mode nor from the hardware test disk, but does occur when starting from OS install disks, etc.? What can I do, John?
Yes.
You going to help Lucas out here?
I'm going to help him. So, yes, his instinct is correct. There are many Apple machines. I don't think it's just the Mini. I think, well, maybe it is just the Mini. But in order to, I guess, save a little money, they used something, as he's pointing out, a graphics chipset from Intel. And rather than having dedicated VRAM or video RAM, it actually shares the RAM that is also used by the computer. So my instinct tells me that, yes, this is a problem with the RAM, because there is no, again, there is no dedicated video RAM. So it, I suspect it's a problem with the RAM inside of this machine.
Okay.
So I'm with him on his analysis here. Now here's the, and now why it happens in some case and another is, I'm not even going to go there. As far as how the machine chooses what RAM to use for video and stuff like that. But still, I think it's either a failing RAM chip or maybe one that's not seated properly. Now, here's the bad news, though I did send him a link to this. The bad news is that some of the early Mac Minis, especially the one he's pointing out, which is a 2006, getting out of the RAM was not an easy task. And if any of you have heard of Mac Mini lore, you typically got to get yourself a putty knife in order to pry this machine open. Now, I did send him a video. We haven't, I don't think we've heard back yet, but I found something at everymac.com that actually has a very nice video showing you how you can pry this machine open and get to the RAM chips. So my suspicion is that it's bad or failing RAM, or maybe it needs to be reseated.
But that's actually, assuming that's the problem, and it certainly could be based on the fact that he has this chip that uses RAM. Mm-hmm. This is actually good news, right? This is one instance where having this chip that uses, your RAM as opposed to having its own onboard RAM is a good thing, because if it was his video RAM that was going bad, that's typically not user replaceable by any stretch. Even though it's tough to open the Mac Mini, you can replace the RAM that's in there, and maybe that'll solve his problem and breathe new life back into this machine.
Yeah, there are very few. I think there are a couple of, I think most Macs now, yeah, the video RAM, if it has separate video RAM, is not something that's typically user upgradable or replaceable. It's soldered right to the motherboard along with the GPU.
Yeah.
So, now, the question, though, and I think you can address this, Dave. So the question is, he said he ran Apple hardware tests and it said, your RAM's OK. And what do you got to say about that?
As we've talked about before, I think as we've talked about, Apple hardware test is only good in that when it reports something is broken, it is almost always correct. However, when it reports that everything is OK, it is not always correct. It will miss things. There is a better memory test program. It's called Memtest. It's included if you install Applejack, or it can be included if you do the optional installs when you install a program called Applejack, which I recommend you install on every machine you have because it's a great troubleshooting utility. You use Applejack or Memtest from the safe mode prompt. So you boot into safe mode or single user mode, different than safe mode. You boot into single user mode with Command S and get to the command line. If you've installed Applejack, it'll have all kinds of little options there for you. But you can simply type memtest at that point, and I believe that'll start it. The reason you want to do it in single user mode is you memtest can only test RAM that is not currently in use. So actually this may, well, he says it's not, it may help find it. So in single user mode, you're using less RAM for system resources and there's a lot more left open that it can test. Now, memtest could take several hours to run through your RAM, depending on how you do things and how fast your machine is. But it is going to do an exhaustive test of your RAM. And I have seen it report stuff bad and correctly bad. It essentially, it's 100% right. If it says your RAM is good, your RAM's good. If it says your RAM's bad, your RAM's bad. So I like memtest. You can also check it out at memtestosx.org, I believe is where you can download that from. But it is baked right into the installer for Applejack.
Yeah. And you know, I got to say my feeling on this. I mean, when you look at this machine, so the Mac Mini is a fine machine. I'm very happy with mine, mm-hmm. but you're looking at this thing. It's a 2006. It's 1.6 gigahertz. As far as I can tell, the maximum memory you can get in this thing is 2 gigabytes. There's no going beyond this for this class of mini. That's not a lot for running any version of OS X. I mean, I think I told you when I bought my mini, Dave, I got it with 2 gigs of RAM, and I quickly determined this is definitely
as a media, as a media server. That probably would work okay.
Okay. All right. If you're not running a lot of apps, then okay. I'm with you. It could act as a server. So perhaps the investment, and I don't have it in front of me here. So if it is not other hardware and it is the memory chips itself, then I think at the very least. So if you're comfortable, Lucas, going into this machine, if you're okay with the soldering iron and a grounding strip and you watch the video and you're cool with that and you want to pry the machine open, I would say that replacing the RAM is worth it. And I couldn't imagine that these chips, although they may be expensive because they're kind of hard to get, but I couldn't imagine it costing you more than $100 or so. I mean, I don't know. I can fiddle around and look, but I for the investment, if you want this machine to keep going, then I would say replace the RAM. And if it still happens, then it's a lost cause and you know,
yeah,
then you're done.
All right. Let's go to Michael. I want to talk a little bit about this. This might turn into a geek challenge, but this is for a very dear friend of the show. Of course, this is, you're about to hear Michael Johnston. Of course, he is the host of the We Have Communicators podcast, but he's also the one that converts this to AAC for you. So Michael has something to ask us all.
Hey guys, it's Michael Johnston with a question that might end up becoming a geek challenge. I've been dealing with an issue with my iTunes library since maybe iTunes 10.5 and maybe even earlier than that. My setup is that I have my entire iTunes library, music, movies, etc., on a Drobo, so that means that it's external. I don't do any symlinks or any trickery like that. I just use iTunes preferences to specify that my iTunes library is on an external drive. And it's been working great like that for, I would say, a year or two now. However, recently I've been having an issue where random albums will transfer themselves to my internal Macintosh HD. And they're not transferring themselves to my home folder. They're actually transferring themselves to the root of the drive. So when this happens, a new folder called Music is being created on the root of the drive. And within that, I have an iTunes Media, Music, and the respective artist and albums. And when this happens, the music stops working in iTunes. And by that, I mean, I get the little exclamation mark by the songs indicating that iTunes can't find the file. And if I double click it, it says, hey, do you want to locate it? I don't know where it is. So if I go into the spot where the music should be and move that folder back from the Macintosh HD into my Drobo, the music files begin to work again, because that's where iTunes assumes those files should be. However, once I do that, iTunes promptly then moves those files back to my Macintosh HD, and that's where the extreme confusion comes from. iTunes moves the files itself and then forgets that it did that. And it keeps doing this. I don't know why. It doesn't seem there's any reason to it. It seems to happen consistently once iTunes has decided to move an album or artist to the internal drive. It keeps doing it every single time I move it back. I've even done the recreating my iTunes library as wow. per the Apple support article HT1451, which I thought actually fixed the problem. I actually recreated it, and there were a few albums that weren't working properly, so I just downloaded them with iTunes Match, and everything seemed to be fine. However, it's doing it again with some music that I newly added to my iTunes library. I haven't found anything else. It was actually doing it with some video files as well, moving video files around in ways that iTunes got confused about. I don't know what to do. It's driving me crazy. Yeah. It means that I can't listen to some songs. It means that I can't watch some video, and it means that my iTunes library gradually becomes really screwed up.
All right. So yeah, this is crazy. And the craziest part about
this, it's not.
I've listened to this a couple of times, both when we prepped the show.
I have the answer, but I'll let you go.
You're going to let me go, aren't you? Okay. So now I'm going to dive off the deep end because, John's going to prove me wrong, but that's okay. So as I'm listening to this, especially this time around, I'm sitting here thinking, this is not like iTunes, right? I mean, when iTunes moves stuff, it keeps track of it. And especially if he says he's rebuilt the library, that at least on the surface tells me that there's not some corruption in the library file or something like that. So, and iTunes just doesn't move things and forget about it. It's pretty good about remembering, you know, where it put stuff. It's sort of crazy about it, but it, you know, it doesn't have a track record of losing track of things. And that tells me that this may not be iTunes doing this. And it makes me wonder if it's Hazel or something like Hazel that's running all the time. You know, maybe, you know, you set up some rule, or there was some default rule in Hazel that now, because your music's on this Drobo, it's like looking there and moving stuff and doing its own thing. The only thing that makes it sound like it's iTunes, of course, is that it's building the file structure, for, you know, the same as iTunes, but I don't know. So I'm curious as to your thoughts on this, John, because I've got some more, and it might have to do with something wacky in the volumes folder being wrong on his Mac. Maybe he needs to clean that out. In fact, that would actually be a one place to check. If you check your volumes folder, so you go to your hard drive, and for those of you following along at home, which of course is everybody else, when you mount another drive like a Drobo, it shows up on your desktop as and in the Finder sidebar as a separate disk. But the way the computer's seeing it is inside your volumes folder, which is the top of your hard drive in a folder called volumes that is invisible. But you can go there by going to the Finder, go to the Go menu, and choose Go to Folder, and then type in /volumes with a capital V. And that will bring you there. If you see anything listed here that is a duplicate of or of a drive that's attached or a drive that's not attached, it probably needs to be deleted. These are only pointers to drives, and they should look like little aliases with the little arrows. They're not technically aliases, but that's close enough for these purposes. They're pointers. But anyway, they're mount points is what they are. So it could be that he's got something wacky out here that's pointing to the root of his drive that shouldn't be. It should be pointing to the root of his Drobo. And maybe that's what's going on. So those are my kind of off the cuff thoughts, John. But if you have the answer,
great.
Go.
Well, I don't know if I have an answer. So number one, I don't know if everybody is at home when they're listening to this. They could be in their car.
Well, yeah,
they could be on the train.
I was using it as a colloquialism.
Okay. No, my only head scratcher here is that I would look in iTunes Advanced, and there are two checkboxes here that I think may be relevant to Michael's situation here. And I'm curious what the state of them are. So one is, there's a little checkbox that says keep iTunes media folder organized. And there's another one, copy files to iTunes media folder when adding to library. And a third one is iTunes media folder location, which I think we know where that is right now. That's pointing to his, I guess, his Drobo, right?
Right.
So I'm curious what's in that advanced section there. And then I'm wondering if the disconnect between where iTunes thinks things are and where they actually are, and that sounds like I think is the root of the problem here, could be explained by the settings in that portion of the window. So I think this, I'm lying. I can't answer it. I think he said he did this is, you know, many of the Apple programs, when you launch them, will offer an option. And does iTunes do this? I don't know if it does. But if you hold down a lot of programs, option command, maybe iTunes does not do this.
Yeah. When you open iTunes, you can hold option and get choose library, because I run about three different libraries.
Okay.
Well, no. Okay. So you're right, Pete. So option in a lot of Apple programs, if you hold down option, I think this applies to a question we're going to have coming up. Actually, I just did option command, and what happens, what is this? I just held down option command and launched iTunes, and it says iTunes is running in safe mode. And I think all that means, it says visual plugins you have installed have been temporarily disabled.
Huh.
I think that's all it's doing.
Yeah, I think that disables, let's see, I'm looking, oh, of course, Apple's knowledge base doesn't respond the first time I load it.
You know what? What is with that? You know, I've had that consistently. Anytime I try to get something in their knowledge base, the first time it says, huh? And the second, when I reload, it comes up. It's a caching thing.
It's got to be some caching thing.
In Safari, you think? Got to clarify.
No,
cache?
On Apple's servers.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. What do they do?
Yeah.
All right.
So, actually, that would be interesting because this only disables add-ons to iTunes, but if Michael knows, you know, that it's happening consistently with a certain song, this would be a way to troubleshoot iTunes. I mean, I don't know if he has any add-ons installed. Most people probably don't. But, you know, it's worth a shot.
Yeah. Clearly his machine is haunted.
I think that's right.
He should send it to me. I'll perform an exorcism. He can get a new machine.
Now wash it with hot, soapy water, Michael. No, don't do that.
So what I was offering, so it's interesting in the Apple programs is that holding down option and command will often, now not in iTunes. iTunes did something I didn't expect there. We just told you what it was. But in the photo apps, it will typically, whether it be iPhoto or Aperture, bring up a pretty detailed rebuild library in hopes of us fixing a problem that exists. But it looks like all of the Apple programs, when you hold down option and command, it'll do something special that'll help you debug or diagnose or rebuild your libraries.
Cool. So, all right. Well, if anybody has any more thoughts, or Michael, if any of this stuff helped, let us know and we'll report back. And
big update.
Oh,
RAM chip prices. I found this. I went to maxsales.com.
Yeah.
So a 2 gig upgrade kit. It's less than I thought, Dave. I thought because these chips are relatively rare, but actually, so to replace those chips in that Mac. And so I went to their memory upgrade section, Mac Mini 2006, $32.
Wow.
Same day shipping. I don't know if it's free or, but they say, yeah. So 30, so it's not even $100 like I thought. So for $33, if you can stand, now that's the thing, you may want to get a technician to pop the machine open and replace the RAM chip. But yeah, so you would be spending more in labor than in parts here.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Right. Right. All right. Okay, so let's move on to Corey. Corey is actually another friend of Mac Geek Gab here, although not someone that you've heard us talk about. And in the future, we will be talking about something that Corey is perhaps working on for us. And we won't go too deep into that, but just let's say he's really?
Corey.
He's
Corey's our good friend.
He's in the business of app development. So that's enough said about that. Mm-hmm. Corey has a question, and we'll come back to Corey at the end for some cool stuff found. He says, I was wondering if you've had experience using Google calendars to create a single shared calendar for use at TMO or elsewhere. I've been looking for a solution for a way to keep track of deadlines, appointments, and other schedule items with team members at my business. If you do, perhaps it would be a good topic for discussion. And yeah, we do. Shared calendars are something we do a lot here. John and I have one shared calendar that we use for Mac Geek Gab. Backbeat Media and TMO, we have several shared calendars that we use. One actually just as a published calendar for like company holidays and that sort of thing, which is really handy. But what, where it gets really fun is if you use Google apps for domains, you can actually have calendars that are published to all the people and all the employees of your company kind of automatically. You don't even have to, you know, configure or work together. It just, boom, it's all right there. And it works really, really well. The Google stuff works. It gets a little funky with reminders, but tasks. But otherwise, with the calendars and reminders and all of that stuff, it works great. So it's a really easy solution. And on a mobile device, it actually, Google will act as an Exchange server. And it works really well there for that type of stuff too.
Now,
so
I highly recommend ask you, Dave.
It. Yeah, go ahead. It's free depending on how you're using it, it's also free. So yeah,
right.
Go ahead.
Now let me ask you this. So for example, you and I decided because the MobileMe iCloud migration, they in my humble opinion, they totally messed it up.
Sure. Well, yeah.
Well, in that you and I were sharing a MobileMe calendar, and then I decided to make the bold move to move to iCloud. And of course, once I did that, I lost access to our shared MobileMe calendar.
That's right. Yeah.
Schedule our shows, which, you know, our schedule isn't, you know, overly complex, but it's sure. Nice to have it available.
Right.
So my devices can beep at me and say, hey, John, get ready. But so we decided to move back to the Gmail solution, which is, I guess, a CalDAV solution. Well, as is iCloud. Right. But
they both are.
Yeah, though iCloud is, yeah, I don't know why they limited. Yeah, I'm not even going to get into it. But what I want to ask you, Dave,
changed, just to be clear, they changed the authentication of it. They didn't change the fact that it's CalDAV or any of that. It's just you're authenticating with MobileMe or iCloud, but
right.
The CalDAV servers do not match.
Once I migrated from MobileMe, I'd lost the ability to log in with my MobileMe account to the calendar.
Because your MobileMe account doesn't exist for the calendar anymore.
Right. They disabled that functionality once I migrated.
Right. That's exactly what happened.
Which to me is lame.
I agree it's lame. I get why they did it, because otherwise you'd have an iCloud account and a MobileMe account with the same email address, the same login. Listen, this is Apple, right? We're used to dealing with funky stuff like that here because we're the Geek Gab, but Apple doesn't operate that way, right? They want to make it simple, and to make it simple sometimes I'm not agreeing with them. I'm just explaining that this is what we have to expect dealing with Apple.
So my question to you is, at one point, I think what you did, so once I made the move here and messed everything up, you then sent me an invite saying, hey, John, come join. So I think you needed my Gmail address, and then you sent me an invite to join this shared calendar where you and I both have read and write access.
That's right. Yeah.
And I guess my question is, I don't think I've ever seen that, but so did you just go to the Gmail calendar interface and say, oh, by the way, set up this person at Gmail or whatever the email address is, send an invite to this person so they can log into the CalDAV server and have these privileges? I think that's what you did, right?
That's an excellent question, because I told Corey you could do this, but we didn't talk about how. So yeah, you go into your Google account, right? So, and go to google.com/calendar. If you have a Gmail account, you also have a calendar associated with that account. In fact, any Google account can have a calendar associated with it. So you go there, and I created a calendar out there called Mac Geek Gab. And then as you float over the calendar, or as you go to if you go to calendar settings, which now is in the upper right hand corner under the little gear, you go to calendars, and then you can click on share this calendar. And so what I did was, I knew your Gmail address, and I knew that you had your calendars associated with this address. So what I did was, I just added you into this, and I said, make changes to events, and I hit save. So you go out here and you, in this share section, you put the person's email address, and then you have four options that you can do. You can only let them see whether you're free or busy. So they won't see the details. They'll just see that you are either available or not. You can have, the default is that they can see all the event details, but they can't make changes. There's one level up from that where you can see the events and make changes. And then there's one level even above that, which essentially makes them an administrator, which gives them the option to add other people to the calendar, and manage sharing. And so I just did that for you. I said, make changes to events and boom. And now, because you are already subscribed to your Google Calendar and all of that, it just magically works for you. So yeah, it's good stuff. It's, it works really well. It's, yeah, it's good. And then when you subscribe to the calendar, you can actually choose the option of whether or not you want to see notifications like of alerts and all that stuff. So that if somebody puts an alert out, you may not want that, or maybe you do, and you know, all of that good stuff. Right. Yeah, it's good. It's, yeah, like I said, it works really well and it's free with your Gmail account. Where it gets, like I said, where it gets easier is if you have a Google Apps for Domains. If we had, and we do have this, we just don't use it for calendars, but if we used our MacGeekGab.com email addresses to subscribe to Google Calendars, we could push this stuff out as a MacGeekGab company-wide calendar and do all that, which is really handy. But
you know, I think you should think about, well, no, because you and I, I've seen now, so we're, you and I are both gearing up for the joy that is Macworld.
iWorld.
Macworld slash
no Macworld pipe iWorld
pipe right
right
I'm sorry it's not character. A slash you're right it's a pipe which is an or correct
yeah that's right so it's Macworld or iWorld I hadn't not thought both. Of it that way it is not both that's right it is Macworld or iWorld not both that's
because right now you and I are scattering various events on the calendar on our Mac Geek App calendar but I wonder if we want to open it up to the rest of the staff
right.
And actually, we've evolved as far as how we schedule things on the staff here, as far as the events we go to and the people that we meet with and stuff like that. And we've typically done low tech. So I wonder if we want to do a calendar-based solution this time around. Yeah, we'll discuss it at the next staff meeting. I don't know. It could get kind of crazy, though. I just like a spreadsheet because you can kind of see everything in one shot versus
scheduling. Oh, yeah, there's something to be said for that, too. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, right. You can view your calendar as a list. So, you know, there's that too. But yeah, it's Macworld or iWorld. Second sponsor for this show, John, is Audio Engine at audioengineusa.com. Fantastic speakers is what these people make. They make some other things too, but really it's the speakers and the amplifiers. Actually, one does not work well without the other. And they build the A5s and the A2s are speakers and amplifiers together, matched, perfectly matched, I should say. And they just sound great. On my desk here in the studio, I've got the A5 speakers, which are what they call their bookshelf speakers, a little bit larger than your typical desktop speaker, but still easily fit on the desk. These things sound so good. They've got two speakers inside the enclosure. I know you've heard me talk about this before if you're a MacGeekGab listener of any length, but man, these things, there's just some of the best speakers that I've heard. They're larger than their size would indicate. They really have a nice clear sound, really well defined, and they can fill a room. It's actually kind of crazy that I have them here in the studio because they're far more than this room ever needs, but they just sound great. So you've got the A5s and then you've got the A2s, which are what I would call their little brother. More geared for, frankly, the environment that I'm in here, more for a desktop, a little bit smaller, same idea, two speakers in each enclosure. They have their own amplifier. Great stuff. And even those can fill a room. And they too sound fantastic. So you can go to Audio Engine and check these out. The A5s are $399 a pair. The A2s are $199 a pair, and you can get them in black or white. However, you get to save 10% using the coupon code MGGTEN for 10% off. They do offer a 30-day free trial. They call it a free audition. If you get them and you don't like them, you've got 30 days to send them back, and they'll send you all your money back. So it's essentially no risk and a lot of joy. So go ahead and check it out, audioengineusa.com and MGGTEN as your coupon code to get you that 10% off. Great stuff. All right, so let's look here, John, and see. I got to kind of get a feel for where we are because we're definitely not going to get through everything that we had queued up for
this
show.
We're at about 55 here.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, correct.
We'll do another question or two, and then we've got quite a bit of cool stuff found to go through. So I'm trying to look. Do you have anything in particular by name of questioner there, John? Name of submitter?
Let's see. Nope.
All right. Then we'll just do Aladdin here.
Well, no, I'm looking. All right. That's no, I'm one. Looking at the choices here and just go.
All right. So we will look at Aladdin. So Aladdin writes, "My mom's iMac died the other day. And when I came by to try to fix it, it seems that the LCD has broken. The funny part is that it might be more than the LCD since it doesn't go into the login screen. The chime rings, and instead of the gray apple, I see squares of white and black. It then goes into the blue screen. But then instead of booting up, it goes back to a white and black screen, but without the apple. The rainbow cursor then appears and it spins and gets stuck there. My mom took it into an authorized service provider and they told her that it would cost about $900 to replace the LCD, but did not say about any other hardware problem. My guess is that they didn't go into it to see if there was anything else damaged. It's obviously out of warranty, and with the things my mom does with her machine, I'd rather she buy an iPad or a new machine than simply replace the LCD. My question is this: can I attach an external monitor to the iMac via mini DVI to troubleshoot?" Okay. To answer your question, yes, you can.
The direct question.
Yes, we're going to answer the direct question. So, yes, you can attach another monitor, but that gets a little funky because now you're going to have a two monitor setup and you may not see what you expect. A better solution, if you can boot it to the point, and it doesn't sound like it's booting to the point where it has network access, but if it does, then, of course, you can do screen sharing and connect to it if you've turned that on. All of that said, I don't think it. I'm not convinced that the LCD is broken. It sounds.
Well, no. Just the fact that you're seeing anything on the LCD,
right?
I got to say to what he's seeing is something unexpected.
That's right.
He's seeing what you should never see when the machine boots up. Which, when you see the machine boot up, you get a screen of a certain color, you got the little spinning progress wheel, and eventually you get a login prompt. So something I think is seriously wrong. I would guess that the hard drive is dying, or the hard drive is or the hard drive is corrupted on this machine.
Yeah,
and
I would
it
say
is just getting terribly confused as to how to even get to the point where you can log in.
Yeah, and it may not be dying hardware at all. Like you said, it at the very least, it's corruption of the OS, right? You know, at some level. And then that might be hard drive corruption, which, again, may be hardware or not.
Okay.
Right?
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It may not be a failing hard drive. It could be just a seriously corrupted operating system on the hard drive. Which, to me, what do you do then? You do the... Now, that's tough, though. I certainly hope backups were made.
Right. Yeah. The first thing I would do is boot with Command V held down. Now V will boot you into V as in verbose, V as in
verbose.
Victor. Yeah. It boots you into verbose mode, which gets funky, but it can be really helpful, especially when your machine seems like it has frozen during the boot process. Because in verbose mode, you're going to see initially, in theory, you're going to see a lot of text scroll by. This is stuff that happens every time your Mac boots. They just put a nice shield over it, either gray or blue in color, so that you don't see all this text going by. But this is what happens when you boot a Unix machine, and you can see all this stuff and you can see what it's up to. And, you know, I talked a couple of weeks ago about how the iMac at the house had this weird thing with the bootcache.playlist file needing to be rebuilt, John. The MacBook Pro that my daughter's been using has had exactly the same problem yesterday. And I put it in verbose mode to boot and I didn't mess with it at all. And after like an hour, it finally finished rebuilding whatever it needed to do and came back up. But I would not have known that any of this was going on if I hadn't booted it in verbose mode. It would have just looked like he discusses it, just hanging there waiting to boot. So check.
Okay.
Yeah, check out verbose mode. And then the other thing to do is just boot from your operating system CD, be it Lion Lion doesn't have a CD, Snow Leopard or Leopard or whatever, and just see if you can get the thing to boot. And then you can run disk utility. But even just the act of booting from the DVD itself is going to tell you a lot more about the state of your hardware, especially the LCD screen. If it's funky there, yeah, then you might have a hardware problem. So there you go. So, John, go ahead.
And I'm going to go ahead here. I have another option, Dave. You may want to boot in what is known as safe boot or safe mode.
Oh, that's true.
And yeah, that's described in, because I know you love it when I do this, Dave, but this is in article HT1564 in the knowledge base. Again, I know you love it when I...
That's great. No. You and Michael,
I know you shake your fist at me when I do that, but we will link to this article in the lovingly handcrafted show notes that I generate shortly after the show is published. And we'll tell you about that in a moment. But anyways, the reason you may want to do safe boot is that safe boot is a limited mode where it only loads the bare minimum, I would say, in the summary. And well, they give a summary, but I'm not going to read it to you. I'm just going to say it boots the machine in a mode where the very bare minimum of kernel extensions, well, it does a bunch of things. Now, I am going to read some of this to you. So it does a directory check of the startup volume.
Right.
It only loads required kernel extensions. So you could have a wacky kernel extension. It runs. So we'll link to the article here. But I would say that is another thing you may want to do here. Now, if you can boot in safe mode and not normally boot, then it's almost certain that you have major corruption on your hard drive. And yeah, you want to do the nuke and pave thing. But
yeah,
safe mode, you may be able. So along with Dave's suggestion that verbose, although a lot of what you see may be hieroglyphics and that you don't really know what it's telling you, safe mode is another strategy when you have a machine that's not starting up properly or misbehaving to get to a certain point. Actually, you know, I think I had this, Dave, when I did have a problem with, I think, a corrupt kernel extension. I actually think booting in safe mode, it actually repaired. I think it was a corrupt kernel extension cache or something. And once
that.
I did safe mode, then the machine booted up properly after that. So that is my suggestion. Safe mode certainly could not hurt, and it may help.
And one last thing before we leave this question behind, you said you went into an authorized Apple service provider, which is exactly what it says, but it's not an Apple store.
Right.
Now, I have had great luck with my particular authorized Apple service provider called Mac Edge here. They really know what they're doing, and they're really out to help the customer. And I'm not saying that yours isn't. However, if there's a repair that's going to cost $900, the first thing an authorized Apple service provider should do is tell you, look, you might be better off calling AppleCare, even though you don't have AppleCare, and seeing if they will qualify you for what's called flat rate repair. Because oftentimes flat rate repair on a machine like this is usually going to be like $300 or less, and it covers everything. It essentially buys you AppleCare for that repair and then anything that any follow-up work from that repair for 90 days. So hang on, Pete,
he's breaking up, man. He's breaking up.
Bad mic cable there. So,
doesn't cover your back. No, it still didn't work.
No. So we will come back to Pete. Yeah. We're going to come back to you. He's going to reseat his microphone while he works on that over there. You got any?
Is that better?
That is better.
That's more better.
Go ahead.
Hey. I was just going to say, it does not cover your battery. I had a flat rate repair done on a MacBook recently. It doesn't cover the battery. It covers everything else.
Yeah, you're
right. He's breaking up.
You'd think that the guy
doesn't cover your battery, Dave.
Thanks, Pete. You'd think that the guy that connected via Skype would be the one that we'd have problems with. But no.
It's Pete, just push Dave aside. Don't be afraid.
Sharp elbows.
Just get up close and personal with Dave.
You're
dead, man.
I'll try not to talk.
Just snuggle up to Dave. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Hey, you can come on over to the mic.
We're all friends here.
That's right. All right. So it does not cover the battery. That's true. Yeah. But check out the flat rate repair and see if that helps, because they call up Apple, and see what that does. All right. Let's move on to cool stuff found.
Really? Wow.
Yes, sir. As I said, it's cool stuff found. Sorry. We paused the show there quick to see if we could fix Pete's mic. And I think so. We fixed it. So good.
That was me.
Little bubble gum, little duct tape, and some you know, baling wire, I think we're all right.
That's it was
right.
an analog problem, right?
It was. Yeah, it still is, actually. We're still using the faulty cable, but I think we'll make it to the end here with this. So, all right, to cool stuff found. I mentioned before that Corey had some things to suggest, and so we're going to burn through these pretty quick. Number one, he says plain text is an app I've been using for quite some time for some very simple note-taking on my iPad, with the added benefit of having those same files on my iPhone and on my computer via Dropbox. Has been very, very useful for me. I use an app called Simple Note for that, which again syncs kind of everywhere and really handy. Yeah, it's awesome to be able to just take those quick little, it's like the notepad, but it syncs, and so it's way better than the notepad because it's just everywhere and it really works well. Number two, he says Plex, P-L-E-X, is an awesome media system, which I've been using for a couple of years now. I have a Mac Mini hooked up to my entertainment center through HDMI, which is then connected to a Drobo chock full of movies and TV shows. I use Plex as the front end, which works great with my Harmony remote, and it's really simple to use. It even passes the girlfriend test, as she can use it when I'm not around. I figured there's nothing. No, that's a valid thing. If you're the geek and your partner is not, or your kids are not, it needs to pass, you know, what I used to call the babysitter test. I need to be able to hand the remote to the, and that's
okay.
That's what the Harmony remote's good for, is you hand it to the babysitter and say, press the watch TV button and you're good to go. And they're good to go.
It's okay, still amazing, though, you, when someone's you looking maybe, at the remote and can't answer the questions the remote is asking them. It's
right. Like, oh, well, that's now, their own
then
dumb
you're,
fault.
Then you're done. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
I'm just wary of. Yeah.
You don't like to offend anybody. I know, John.
Well, no, but I mean, no, not offensive, but I mean, you're putting your relationship on the line here by saying the girlfriend test.
Yeah.
What if she can't cut it? You know, I mean, maybe over.
At least they'll let you get a new girlfriend again, right?
I mean, that's right. There you go. That's right. All right. So that's Plex and plain text and simple note from Corey there.
Wow.
Let's see. Mark on Twitter posted something that I retweeted from the Mac Geek Gab account, so you can follow Mac Geek Gab on Twitter. He said that if you double click in the blank space next to the tabs in Safari. So if you go into Safari and you've got, if you've got a tab open, but there's enough space between that tab and the end of the line, if you just double click in that space, it creates a new tab automatically right there for you. So that's something I never knew about. You learn something new every day. And that's why we're here.
Command T will do it too.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, Command T will do that. Yeah.
Right, just saying.
But that's not hidden, Pete. That's not cool. Yes. Okay, and then we talked about traffic and GPS in the last show, and listener John has something really cool to talk to us about. And actually, of course, as many of you know, it wasn't just John that suggested this.
Dave, this is John Michael from Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. I was listening to episode 369, where John was talking about traffic rerouting with GPS. You ought to check out the iOS app Waze, W-A-Z-E, Waze or Waz. It's a social mapping app. I found that it's more accurate than my Garmin in my car in predicting what time it'll take me to get to work through rush hour. I've actually done a little test of it where I've tracked times from when I leave my house and the estimated time of arrival that Garmin says and the estimated time that Waze tells me. And Waze is always more accurate because it's based on other people using the app and what their travel time is and what they're reporting. So you might want to check that one out. It's actually free and it's actually kind of fun. So love the show. Thanks much.
Thanks, John. That's awesome.
I like free.
Free it is. Good. I know. Yeah.
Well, also cool. I'm shocked because I, you know, I'm on the East Coast here. I didn't think they had traffic in Wisconsin, but apparently they do. And yes, all the Wisconsin listeners will
you don't
shake
want to
their fist at me.
Yeah, he doesn't want to.
But I just did. So Wisconsin is off the map. No, I know there is.
Wisconsin no longer believes in the Mac Geek Gab as a state.
No, they do. No, and I see this, but it's a, you know, compared to little old Connecticut, that's a big state, but yeah. Yeah. But that's a cool concept of crowdsourcing. I'm very interested in this all of a sudden since the app told me to do this, Dave. It was like, there's traffic. So I'm going to load it as we speak.
Awesome. All right. So while you load, I'm going to mention that Peter, I think he also tweeted us and said that you know, there's some cool stuff, you know, buried in iOS in the accessibility settings. So if you go into settings, general accessibility, and go to assistive touch, you can actually create some cool little gestures that can automatically happen and turn on some other stuff. Of course, it's meant for people that that can't tap or can't do two fingers on the device at once. But you know, even if you have the capability of doing that, it's cool. Of course, if you don't have the capability of doing that, well, then it's even cooler because they've gone out of their way to create this stuff. But yeah, go ahead and check it out. It's there's some interesting things. And, you know, while we're there, I will re-mention that in, I think it's in the accessibility stuff. You go into accessibility on iOS 5 in the same spot. You go into hearing there and turn on custom vibrations. And then you can create custom vibrations. And I've started doing them with, I think I mentioned, I started doing them with Morse code. So when, you know, if Lisa calls and I've got my phone muted, I can tell that it's her because I have Morse code for LISA right there, and I can feel it in my pocket, and it's like, okay, I know who's calling me. And you know, or if I don't feel that, if I just feel,
you know, my Morse code,
I'm the son and grandson and nephew of three licensed ham operators, so it was,
I was
kind
gonna
of,
say
kind
I,
of around
I
as
knew
kid.
Yeah, I know your dad is a ham,
yeah,
which,
yeah,
you know, so. I think you and I would both have gotten into it if it wasn't for the internet.
Oh yeah, yeah. The computers and the modems and stuff were the you know, our version of that. Certainly, yeah. I mean, my dad would talk around the world when he could work skip and you know all that when he was a kid, and when he saw what we were doing.
I did some of that.
Yeah, yeah.
On what they call, some people will shake their. Well, no, they'll shake their fist. No, well, it's called the Levin meter.
Oh right,
it's a not quite legal CB. Right. But I know, I remember talking to Europe, especially at night when you get the skip. Or, yeah. No, it's great fun. But yeah, no, I remember a friend of mine trying to get me into the whole packet radio and stuff like that. And then
yeah,
the modems and the internet came along and it was like, well, what's the point?
Well, that's it. Right. This replaced that. To a point. There's still a lot of fun that can be had with hams. Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Scott writes, he said, did you know that iTunes now supports entering half stars for song ratings without extra software? In iTunes, if you click between the dots or stars for a song, it will show a 1/2 after the stars. I found this out by accident by clicking between the dots. That's pretty cool. That's stuff I didn't know. And that, folks, is what Cool Stuff Found is all about. That's why we like to do that. So, John, there's a couple things, of course, that we need to go through for to contact information and all that stuff. Yeah, but I want to say first that this may very well be, I don't know that we're going to get a show in next week. So this may very well be our last show before the new year. It is certainly our last show before Christmas. So I'm going to say Merry Christmas to everybody. And I'm going to go on a little rant here about this. Because
yeah, because I think I'll counter your rant. I know where you're going with this. Go for it.
I don't know. See, the thing is, we've gotten this thing in our society here where we're so worried about I don't know if it's offending somebody or slighting someone. The thing is, when somebody says Merry Christmas to me or says Happy Hanukkah to me or whatever, I take that as them wishing me a nice day and a nice holiday. And that's a beautiful thing.
Sure.
And whether or not I celebrate whatever they've wished me, they meant good by it. So I take no offense. If you wish me happy something that I don't celebrate, it's all good. So happy holidays, Merry Christmas, whatever all of that means to you. I wish you a good day and a great holiday for yourself.
And
so
I'll just counter it. I'll counter it very quickly.
Countering a Merry Christmas. There's no counter to it. I decline your opportunity to counter a Merry Christmas. It's meant to be a good thing.
Yeah, yes, it is. But I will counter the folks that take offense if you say Happy Holidays, because to me that's all encompassing. Yes, Christians, Christmas. That's all good stuff. But don't take offense if somebody says,
"Oh,
Happy Holidays." And no, there's a certain segment of the population that seems to get very upset if you don't acknowledge Christmas versus To me, it's a holiday season. You can have any sort of holiday you want.
That's right.
And just relax.
It's all good.
Enjoy, you know, the whatever you've, you know, good things have happened throughout the year, being with family and friends and stuff like that. To me, holiday is generic enough where it's not a bad thing. So if somebody says happy holidays to you,
it's okay. The same. That's right.
Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, well, whatever the heck. It's cool.
It's all good. Yes, it is a good thing when someone wishes you any of the above. And
I think we're in agreement.
Our holiday wishes that way when we say them. But it also may be I think we're going to do a premium show this coming Thursday. But this is our last opportunity, other than the little notification that we will likely put out for the premium show. It's our last opportunity to also say Happy New Year. And so we will certainly be back after the new year. I'm not sure what our schedule is going to be like next week. So no huge promises there on getting another show in. So with that, indeed, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, all of the above. Yeah, it's good. It's all good. If you want to contact us, you can write us at feedback@macgeekgab.com.
And Dave, there is no argument on this point. It is feedback@macgeekgab.com.
I thought it was feedback@macgeekgab.com. Did you guys change it?
Easy for you to say. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
I told you my tongue was bleeding.
206-666-GEEK is the phone number to call. And John, Geek is
4335. But that is not the only way you can reach us. Oh, what else? Well, we got this, you know, some of the kids have heard of this Facebook thing. So if you want to go to facebook.com/MacGeekGab, you'll find us there. We're adding members day by day. Got a nice community there. But what else? Oh, my gosh. There's the Twitter thing, Dave. And, you know, if somebody wanted to reach us on Twitter, what would you do?
Well, I would go to twitter.com/MacGeekGab, as we mentioned before, to follow the show. You can go to twitter.com/JohnFBron to follow you, John. twitter.com/PilotPete to follow Pilot Pete. And twitter.com/DaveHamilton to follow me. And I think that pretty much does it. We do certainly appreciate iTunes comments. It is the end of the year, and I do want to say thank you to all of you for simply being here with us. And whether you contribute and send in questions or tips or anything like that, we certainly appreciate all of that. But even if you're just here along for the ride and listening and enjoying what we all do together here, you're part of the family just like everybody else, and we really appreciate that.
And yeah. Supporting our sponsors,
that's
of course.
That's true, yeah, absolutely.
But we love every single one of them.
Yeah, and on the marketplace right now, of course, is Hover with their 10% off with MGG. The A2 speakers from Audio Engine, where you can get your 10% off with MGG10. You can get BB Edit and Yojimbo from Barebone Software. You can get Disc Label and PDF Pen and Text Expander and Text Expander's Touch, from Smile and Gazelle, of course, where you can sell all your old used electronics at gazelle.com. All through Backbeat Media. Of course, we thank Cashfly for providing the bandwidth and Michael Johnston. Hopefully, we've got a solution for his problem, but we thank him nonetheless for all of his hard work converting this show to AAC. And folks, I think that is going to do it for this episode of MacGeekGab. Wow. Thus comes to an end, MacGeekGab 370. As you listen to the band play us out.
Yeah, and yeah. I'll say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too, John. Thank you very much for everything you've done for us all year.
Oh no, thank you. And I'm waiting for my gift.
Thanks, Pete.
Thank you, guys.
So wait, what's my gift, Dave?
Your gift is a very important piece of advice, John, and it's something I hope you'll carry with you throughout your entire life, and it is this. Don't get caught.
Made up.